knew it was the one. I'd been looking for a home for a while, and I found it on the island, in that house.
The Dorchett place is a lot of house for a single man.
A woman with steel-gray hair wound in a braid eyed him more than a little dubiously while she continued to knit something out of bright green yarn.
Yes, ma'am. I'm working on finding enough furniture so it doesn't echo. A lot of you don't know me, but I'm around. Chief Wickett's showing me the ropes, and when he leaves, I'm going to continue his open-door policy. I'm going to do my best for you. This is my home now. You're my neighbors. As chief of police, I'm sworn to serve and protect you and this island. That's what I'm going to do.
He started to go back to his seat, stopped when a pudgy guy with a gray speckled beard stood up in the front row.
You're cozied up with C.C. Lennon, aren't you?
If you mean that in a romantic sense, I can only say, I wish. The answer brought some laughter and gave Reed enough time to flip through his mental files and identify the questioner. John Pryor, he recalled. Year-rounder, plumber, owned a couple of summer rentals with his brother.
It seems to me you wouldn't have this job if Cece hadn't pushed you for it.
Now just one minute, Hildy began,
but Reed held up a hand.
It's okay, Mayor. It's a fair enough question. It's true I wouldn't have known about the job or the house coming up for sale if Cece hadn't told me. I'm grateful she did, so I had a shot at both.
You got shot back in Portland. Maybe you figure being chief of police here is going to give you a safe, easy ride.
Mutters rose up, disapproving ones, and Pryor's face only hardened.
It's not about me getting a safe, easy ride, John. It's about doing my duty, about ensuring a safe ride for the people who live here, for the people who come here during the season to fill the hotels and B&Bs. You and your brother, that's Mark, isn't it, own one of those B&Bs. You've got a nice place, Reed added. If you have any trouble after March, you give me a call. Meanwhile, if you've got any more questions for me, we can head over to drink up after the meeting. I'll buy you a beer.
Pryor didn't take him up on the beer, but others did throughout January, including his 4 year-round deputies, his dispatcher, and 2 of the 3 part-time deputies who came on from June through September. The third spent 6 weeks every winter on St. Lucia. His only sticky beer came with the sole female deputy. Maddie Stevenson had served 4 years in the Army, put in 3 years with Boston PD before moving back to the island where she'd been born. She'd taken another 18 months to work as full-time caregiver to her mother, a widow, when her mother contracted breast cancer, before becoming the first female full-time deputy on the island force. She'd served as deputy for 9 years. Her mother, 9 years a cancer survivor, owned and operated a seasonal island gift shop. Maddie sat across from him at a two-top, her hair short, straight, ashy blonde, her eyes blue and hard. She wore a flannel shirt, brown wool trousers, and wolverine boots. He'd done his research, which was as much a matter of talking to people as reading her file. So he knew, after an angry marriage and divorce, she'd taken up with, or started seeing, longtime bachelor John Pryor. He didn't have to do any research to glean she wasn't particularly pleased with her new incoming boss. He decided to play it straight and to the point.
You're pissed they're bringing me in as chief.
They snuck you in from the outside. I've got close to 10 years on the island force. Nobody so much as asked if I wanted the job.
I'm asking you. Doesn't make a damn bit of difference now. I'm asking you, he repeated. I'm not chief yet.
You've got the contract.
Yeah, I'm still asking you. You've got 4 years military, 12 years with the police, and a long time on the island. You're probably more qualified than me.
She sat back from her beer, folded her arms over her chest.
I am more qualified.
Why do you figure they didn't offer you the job?
You're male. You took a couple bullets. You're one of the heroes of the Down East.
He shrugged.
Oh, that's fact. Except heroes is a stupid word for what happened that night. You served in Iraq. You've got a Purple Heart. Hero's not a stupid word for that.
I'm male, he repeated.
Are you telling me you think they passed you over because you're not?
She opened her mouth, shut it, picked up her beer and drank.
I want to say yes. I want to because they never gave us a heads up. The chief never let us know he planned to retire until it was a done deal. I went at Hildy about it, too. Went right at her. I dated her brother when we were in high school, goddammit.
She drank again.
But I can't say yes because I'm not a liar.
Then why?
You already know why.
I don't know what you think.
I've got a temper. I got written up a few times in the army, in Boston, and here, too. Not in the last couple years. Not since I got rid of the asshole I was stupid enough to marry. I freaking meditate every morning now.
He stopped himself from smiling, only nodded.
Does it work?
Now she shrugged.
Most of the time.
Good to hear. I don't care how you button your shirt.
She smirked at him.
This is a man's shirt.
Don't care. Other than the chief, who's leaving, you've got more time as a cop than any of the other deputies. I'm going to need to depend on you, and I'm going to need you to give me a chance before you write me off as a dumbass off-islander.
What if that's my conclusion after I give you a chance?
Then I won't last long as chief.
She considered.
That's fair.
Okay. One more thing. If I need a plumber and call John Pryor, is he going to fuck with me?
Now she snorted.
He shouldn't have given you grief at the meeting.
It wasn't that much grief.
He shouldn't have anyway. Makes us both look like assholes. And bringing Cece into it made him look like an even bigger asshole.
The answer's no. He takes too much pride in his work.
Also, good to know.
Thinking of Cece, he drove over to her house on his next day off. When she didn't answer, he walked around, as he often did, to her studio. He could see the art through the glass, but not the artist. He felt a little tug of worry, told himself it was just the cop always looking for worst case, but he walked around to the patio. He'd try the door, he thought, just step in and call out. Then he spotted the woman sitting on the rocks on the snowy beach. He made his way down, enjoying the slap of the wind, the sound of the water, and the look of it. As hard a winter blue as the sky overhead. She heard him, turned her head. That face, he thought. That instant sucker punch in the chest. He climbed up, sat beside Simone.
Hell of a view,
he said. A favorite.
Yeah, mine too.
She'd wound a scarf with a half dozen bold colors around her neck, pulled a cap of bright blue over her hair. She looked vivid, Reed thought, and just downright amazing. Cece's not here, she told him. She's taking a couple days at a spa with a friend. Spur of the moment.
I wondered when she didn't answer. Her car's out front. Yours, too.
I drove her to the ferry this morning. He picked her up on the other end.
He, huh?
Reed slapped his chest.
Heartbreak.
They've been friends for decades, and he's gay.
And hope springs yet again.
He waited a beat, enjoyed her smile.
Am I in the way here?
No. I heard about the meeting the other night. Apparently you handled yourself well.
People need time to get used to me, judge whether I suck at the job or not.
I don't think you'll suck.
I won't, but they need a chance to decide.
Most islanders like you, I hear.
I'm a likable guy.
He shot her a smile to prove it.
I can even slide into affable. How about you?
She looked back out over the water. I don't think I do affable very well.
No, me. Let's talk about me. Am I likable?
She turned her head again, gave him a long look with those tiger eyes. Probably. I don't really know you.
I could take you to dinner. It's meatloaf night at the sunrise, or there's Mama's pizza.
She shook her head. I'm taking a break, but I plan to work tonight. She took a deep breath of that slapping wind. The cold's getting through.
When she shifted, he climbed down, offered her a hand.
"It's the meatloaf, right?"
he said, making her laugh. "It factors, but I really do intend to work. I needed some air first, some mind airing."
"As long as it's not me asking you out, that's the problem."
She tipped her head this time, sort of slid her gaze up. "I don't know if it is or not because I don't really know you. And because I've opted not to go out with your gender the last few months."
"Hey, me too. With yours. I bet we're due."
"Why?"
"Because," he said, as they walked through the lumpy path in the snow they'd both formed in the drifts. "You've got to break the fast sometime."
"No, why are you on a fast?"
"Oh."
He concluded a woman wasn't brushing a guy off, altogether, if she kept talking to him.
"Well, got shot, had to brood and bitch over that a while, came here, met the breathtaking Cece, changed my life. Not a lot of time for meatloaf with a woman in there. You?"
"I'm not really sure. Lack of interest? There may have been some SBZ in there."
"SBZ?"
"Simone Brood Zone. I sometimes reside there. But primarily I'd say a lack of interest."
"I can be interesting as well as affable."
He started up the beach steps with her.
"I could clear these off for you."
"That's the affability. It's appreciated, but we're getting another few inches tonight anyway."
"Have you got everything you need in case there's more? Food? Drink? Sorry,"
he said when his phone signaled.
"I need to go by the..."
He trailed off, studied the text.
"I need to go by the market anyway, so..."
"What is it?" "I know faces," she said as they reached the patio. "You've got a good poker face, or maybe that's cop face, but it slipped for a second. Is your family all right?"
"Yeah, it's nothing like that."
"I know faces," she repeated. "You should come in. Have coffee." She crossed the patio, opened the door. Cece would insist and would be disappointed in me if I didn't.
"Coffee's good."
He stomped off his boots, stepped into the house, the warmth. She turned on the fire first, then stripping off the coat, hat, scarves, gloves, walked to the coffee machine. "Straight or fancy?"
"Just black."
"Manly man." She kept her voice light. "I usually go for lattes myself. I worked in this crappy coffee shop when I first got to New York, but we made excellent lattes."
"I upset you the night of the party. Your friend said I didn't, but..."
"Me's right, as usual, you didn't. I was thinking about something, and you made me think harder. I was abrupt, but that's because I was inside my own head."
"The SBZ?"
Her lips curved as she shrugged. "Maybe just inside the border." As she frothed milk for her latte, she glanced over her shoulder. He hadn't taken off his coat. "The phone. It has something to do with that. With the Down East."
"Are you a little bit psychic like Cece?"
"No, it's a logical assumption. You should tell me." She turned back to finish the coffees. "Not all that long ago, I'd have made sure you didn't. You couldn't. Now I'd like you to tell me." He took off his coat but didn't say anything when she brought him the coffee. "Let's sit down." She gestured toward the sofa facing the fire. "You're the first person I've asked into the house and made coffee for in, I can't think if ever. I wonder why that is. I don't think it's your famous affability."
"I don't want it to be because of shared trauma."
"But part of it has to be, doesn't it? Nobody who hasn't experienced what we did can ever really know. For years, I shut it out. You can't see if you don't look, can't hear if you don't listen. Do you want to know why I started looking and listening again?"
"Yeah, I do."
Simone shifted to sit cross-legged on the sofa. "I ran into my arch enemy from high school. She was golden and beautiful and had breasts. I was brown and gawky and ordinary."
"You were never ordinary."
"That's what I saw in the mirror that night in the bathroom. I thought, why can't I be beautiful like Tiffany?" She'd come into the theater with the boy who'd just dumped me for her because I wasn't ready to put out. heartbreak, humiliation, with the intensity you can only feel at that age. World over. And then it happened. The boy who dumped me was dead. Tiffany was shot in that young, beautiful face. Now, years later, she confronts me. Another bathroom in the universe of irony. She said ugly things. And for whatever reason, that few minutes of ugliness made me start looking and listening. Not for her. For me.
I couldn't stop looking and listening, Reed told her. I don't think it's an obsession, but I'll cop to mission. I followed every story, put together files. It never seemed right or complete. They barely had a brain among them, and the only one with a brain? Why didn't he go after the girl he blamed for ruining his life? There had to be more, and I wanted to know what it was.
And you were right, Simone added. The more turned out to be Patricia Hobart.
Yeah. That made sense in a sick, twisted way once we...
They, he corrected,
went through the things she had to leave behind in her rush to Rabbit. She was like 15 at the time of the Down East. Already a psychopath and a smart one, he added. Really smart, even at 15. Smart enough to hide her nature. But before she shot me, before it made that sick, twisted sense, I followed everything. Essie did too. One of the ways she did, and I did, we get alerts whenever anyone who was there that night dies. Any reason.
So she understood the look on his face just for that second. Who died?
He was mall security. Took a couple of bullets that night. Went back to work when he recovered. A seriously good guy.
Did she kill him?
I'm going to say yes. No proof, not yet. And she's good, he added as he pushed up to pace. She's damn good. She's been in the wind since she shot me, not a damn trace. Now Robert Koufax is dead because she laced his drink on a beach in Bermuda.
Bermuda?
I don't know why he was there. I'll find out. I just got the alert. His name, COD. Cause of death, he explained. She found a way, he continued, because that's her mission.
She's killing survivors? That doesn't make sense.
Finishing what she started. Because she left enough behind to prove she started it. She planned it. Hadn't quite finished the plans. Her brother got impatient. My theory, anyway.
She lost some of the color the cold had pumped into her cheeks. Me's a survivor. My mother, my sister. Me? You?
Me got some press, but she didn't give any interviews. The same with you. Your family didn't get a lot of attention. I think she's after ones who did. But you and me, we got through to 911. First and second callers. You should be careful, and you can believe I'll be watching for her.
Anxiety churned in her stomach. The islands mobbed in the summer. Day trippers, vacationers, summer workers.
I'm going to be chief of police. Every cop and first responder is going to have her photo. I'm going to have it posted in every fricking shop and restaurant and hotel, on the ferry. I'm not saying she won't try to get here, but I think for now, she's after easier targets. And if she tries to come here, it'll be to finish me first. I shot the bitch.
He didn't sound very affable now, Simone thought. He sounded hard, tough, and very, very capable. I think I want something stronger than coffee. She rose. How about you?
I wouldn't say no.
She opted for wine, a full-bodied red, and poured two generous glasses.
Now I haven't just upset you, I've scared you.
I don't think so. I don't know how I feel exactly. Unnerved, you bet. I'm not brave. I wasn't brave that night.
You're wrong about that. You didn't run screaming, and there wouldn't have been any shame if you had. But you did the smart thing. You hid and called for help. I've heard the 911 call. You held it together. That's bravery.
I didn't feel brave, and I haven't since. But come up to my studio. I want to show you something.
Like etchings?
She smiled, didn't feel quite as unnerved. Not in the least.
I keep striking out with the beautiful artists in this house. I have to try another tactic.
But he went with her.
I can arrange for a cop, a girl cop, to stay with you tonight if you're worried.
No, but thanks. I've always felt safe in this house. She won't make me a victim again. I know her victims. In the studio, he saw dozens and dozens of sketches pinned to boards. He knew them too. He knew the faces, the few she'd created with clay. It started with her, Tiffany. Simone picked up the small bust. I did her before, she turned the bust, and after. It, I thought, would be a kind of purge for me. But it didn't turn out that way. You're one of the reasons. Fascinated, he watched her.
I am?
The night of the party, I talked to me up here, showed her these two faces. I talked to you. More, I listened to you. And since... She survived, Simone said, and set the bust down again. But she's not grateful. I hadn't been either, not really. That's what struck me. I lived, and instead of being grateful, I wanted to pretend it never happened. What does that say about the ones who died? Was I saying they never happened? She took a long drink. Proof of life, you said that night about emergence, about Tish. It struck me. It rang the damn bell. So I'm, in my way, I guess, giving them all proof of life. He looked at her now, at that face. Not just because it made his heart thump. Not just because she made his blood swim. But because he felt a kind of awe and respect.
This is bravery.
She closed her eyes a moment. God, I hope so. He stepped to the shelf, carefully lifted one of the busts.
I knew her. Angie. Angela Patterson. She was so damn pretty. I had a real thing for her.
Oh, you were in love with her?
No, but I liked her a lot.
He thought of the kiosk, the blood, the body, and looked at the face, young, lovely, just on the edge of flirty.
I talked to her mother a couple times a year. This will mean the world to Angie's mother.
I want to create a memorial. All their faces. People shouldn't forget who they were, what happened to them. You could help me.
How?
I want to include the people who've died since, because of that night or because of Patricia Hobart. You could help me.
I could.
He set the bust down.
I will. What will you do with it when you finish?
That'll be months, longer. I'll need to take a break from it or I won't see or hear clearly. But I'm hoping my father can help there. He's a lawyer and has a lot of connections. And, of course, there's Cece. I'd like to do molds, cast it in bronze, place it in a park.
I can maybe help there, too.
How?
I talk to the next of kin, survivors, off and on, like Angie's mom. So with that, we might be able to help get that going when you're ready for it.
She nodded slowly. An appeal from survivors and loved ones? Hard to refuse. Some might not want this.
They'd be wrong. So.
He set aside his glass, stepped to her. He took her face in his hands, watched those gorgeous eyes calculate. He kissed her, soft, slow. No demand, no pressure. And felt, hoped he felt, her give just a little before he eased away again.
Change of tactic, he said.
It was interesting.
Told you. I'm going to head out for my lonely meatloaf. I'll see you around.
I don't get around very much, she said as he started out.
That's okay. I do.
He stopped at the doorway, turned for just a moment.
I've got to say this one more thing. You're the most beautiful woman I've seen in my goddamn life.
She laughed. Sincerely amused.
I'm not even close. You're wrong again.
I ought to know what I've seen in my own life. Cece's got my number around here somewhere. You need anything? Call.
She frowned as he walked out, as she listened to his boots on the stairs. She sipped more wine, then poured what he'd left in his glass into her own. Drank a little more. He was interesting, she thought, and could put the affable on and off like a pair of socks. She had a sense he could be dangerous, and that just made him more interesting. Plus, he knew how to kiss in a way that nudged open the door just a crack. She'd have to think about that one. Most of all, he'd looked at her work and seen what she needed to give it, what she'd needed from it. And he'd understood. Chapter 17. Standing on the widow's walk, Essie McVee marveled. The day shuddered with dead gray February, cold as the lash of a frozen whip, and still the view spread like wonder. The sea and sky, both that broody, bored gray, couldn't ease the breath of it, or the power of the rocky coastline with the incessant flick of icy water. She smelled pine and snow, breathed air so cold and damp it felt like she swallowed chipped ice. Far to the right, the buildings of painted clapboard formed the village, and a path of trampled snow wound through trees with white-coated branches. Far off, the lighthouse stood, a beacon of color and joy against the stubborn winter gloom. Below the house, a rickety pier with some worrisome gaps, cut on an angle through a break in the rocks. You've got a dock.
Yeah, such as it is. I've got a boat shed, too. No boat. Mrs. Dorchett sold it after her husband died. I might get one. A boat. Maybe.
A boat.
Maybe. I've already got the shed and the pier. It seems like I should have the reason for them.
She looked up at him, remembered the sorrowful boy on the bench at the park, the young cop learning his way, the partner she'd gone through doors with, the friend she'd found bleeding. Now this, a man looking out at what was his.
It's not a shithole, Reed.
He grinned.
Need some work here and there, but nope, not a shithole.
How's it feel to be chief?
I'll let you know next month. I'm making some progress, finding my feet. For the most part, people seem to be reserving judgment on whether or not the off-islander can make the grade.
You'll make it.
Yeah, I will. It'll be quiet for the next couple of months, so more time to find my feet, get to know who's who and what's what, and take control at the station house.
Any issues there?
He made a non-committal grunt. The current chief's got my back, and that helps. The deputies, the dispatcher, they know what's what, and things are in a kind of lull during the transition. Got some quirks, like anywhere, but they're solid enough. The best of the bunch is the lone female.
Do tell.
Smart and tough. A little bit of a hothead, but I can work with that.
Beware the office romance.
What? Oh, no.
Laughing, he shook back his disordered mop of hair.
Hell no. Not my type. And I'd be her boss on top of that. Boss. Ha ha. Anyway, she's about 40, divorced and hooked up with an island plumber. Then there's Leon Wendell, former Navy petty officer. 7 years on the force here. Likes to fish. His wife of 30 years is a teacher. 3 kids, 1 granddaughter.
7 years? And they brought you in over him?
He's not a boss, Reed said with a shake of his head. Doesn't want to be. He'll keep his eye on me, though, guaranteed. We've got Nick Masterson, 33, newlywed. He's competent. His family owns the Sunrise Cafe. His mom keeps the books. And we finish the full-timers with Cecil Barr, 24, easygoing but not stupid. His father's a fisherman, mother's a nurse, older sister studying to be a doctor, younger brother still in high school. We wind up with Donna Miggins, dispatcher, 64, sharp. I've been warned by the lady herself that I can fetch my own coffee, do my own errands, and she won't take any sass. I like her. I'm a little afraid of her, but I like her.
You're happy.
I am that.
And you've put back most of the weight you lost.
I've been patronizing the Sunrise Cafe. Most islanders wander through sometime during a given week, and I'm a crap cook anyway.
You ought to learn to deserve that kitchen.
If I don't cook, he pointed out, it stays clean.
That makes a stupid kind of sense, she conceded.
Let's head down, get some coffee. I just bought that fancy machine.
I don't know why, she said as they went in down the stairs. When you drink it, it's black.
The girl of my dreams likes lattes.
The artist. He flapped a hand on his heart.
Thump, thump.
She paused, as she hadn't on the way up, outside the master suite, and with the privilege of an old friend, wandered in.
Really nice space. Great views again.
You still don't have a bed.
He pointed to the mattress and box springs.
That's a bed.
A bed has a frame, a headboard, possibly a footboard. Some style.
You're never going to get the girl of your dreams on that. You underestimate my charm and sex appeal.
No, I don't.
She looked around, noting the teddy bear cop sitting on what he mistakenly called a dresser.
You need an actual dresser, instead of that ugly block of wood you've had since college. Maybe a nice chair, some tables, nice lamps, a rug, and...
She trailed off as she peeked into the ensuite.
Jesus, the bathroom's fabulous.
Previous owner's son, like the kitchen. No more piss-trickle showers for me, baby.
Spring for some new towels. Find some local art for the walls in here, and a good mirror for the bedroom.
You're a tough sell, Essie.
I know what I know.
She walked out and into an empty bedroom.
What are you going to do with this? Home office?
No, I set that up already down the hall. I figure a guest room. I'll end up having two of them. You and your family could come stay sometime. I'm going to buy a big-ass grill. I'll start paying you back for all the meals and nights I ended up flopping at your place.
We'd love it.
First decent grill on the deck weekend, we're both off.
Deal. Queen bed, you've got the room. Simple duvet and curtains. A little desk and chair. Nice lamps and end tables, nothing matchy. An old dresser. Not a crap one, but an old one.
What are you, my decorator? Yeah, yeah, he said before she could. You know what you know.
She continued her exploration, came across the unrehabbed bath. Sea green tiles bordered in black. Sea green john and shower tub combo. Sea green sink in a white vanity.
I like it.
You do?
It's retro and kitschy, and it has possibilities. You need a new vanity and some paint, and some fun towels, shower curtain. It'll be adorable.
She wandered on, rattling off ideas to the point he figured he should be taking notes. Then he opened the door to his office.
Ah, she said.
He'd put his desk, a big clunky holdover from college, in the middle of the room. That way he could see the views, the door, and the pair of rolling boards he'd set up against a wall. On the first whiteboard, he had tacked Patricia Hobart's photo dead center. Along with photos and crime scene shots of her victims, he'd written in timelines, added copies of reports. Lines, solid or dotted, fanned out, intersected. On the second board, he'd pinned the three shooters from the Down East Mall. Timelines again, weaponry and photos, names, ages of the dead. Separated by a red line, he'd displayed photos, names, ages, locations, employment of survivors. The room held three gunmetal gray filing cabinets, a couple of folding chairs leaning against a wall, drywalled, mudded, sanded, but not painted, his old mini-fridge, also from his college years, and a kitchen-sized trash can half full of empty cans of Coke and Mountain Dew, water bottles, and take-out coffee cups. The open closet held office supplies. Paper for the printer, the scanner, file folders, a tub of markers, a stack of legal pads. On the floor of the closet sat a case of water, a case of Cokes,
another of the dew, all opened and pillaged. Essie moved to the boards, studied them.
Good, thorough work, Reed.
It's quiet here now, and I'm not chief yet. I've had the time. Still, she got to another, and she's back in the wind. There's no telling who she'll target next, when or where. Might as well toss the names in a hat and pick one.
The twisted bitch is more logical than that. To her mind, every target so far got some sort of splash out of that night. A little fame, a little fortune, and a routine she could document or exploit. We can go right down the line on that, ending with Bob Koufax.
All over his Facebook page, Reed agreed. Where he was going, when, why, more when he got there. She took herself a working vacation.
Yeah, she did. The feds tracked her to a room at the same resort.
Reed whipped around. You're sure?
I know how to keep my head down and my ears open. You can add this name to your board. Sylvia Guthrie. She won't use that name again, but she used it to book and pay for the room and her expenses. American Express. And to book her flight, round trip, first class, direct from New York. JetBlue out of JFK.
Chaz is in New York. He got a promotion and moved to New York.
They don't think she had her hole there. They're of the same mind as we've been. Canada.
She won't stay there now.
Unlikely. I've got copies of her Guthrie passport and driver's license photos down in my bag. It listed a New York address, but it's bogus. You can have them for your board, too. My information is she flew into Bermuda the day before the target, got herself a fucking massage, charged $100 bottle of wine and a damn fine meal to her room. Charges also include a couple of virgin daiquiris from the drink service on the beach on the third day. The target and his family racked up some bar bills there, same time frame, before the target became short of breath, keeled over, and died, thanks to the cyanide in his Mai Tai.
The second time she's used poison. Dr. Wu. Reed gestured to the board. Crowded beach instead of a crowded bar for Koufax. Cyanide in his drink instead of jabbing him with a toxin like Wu. But it rings the same. I think she likes to shoot, he added. I think she likes the impact, the blood, but sometimes poison's easier.
Same page, Essie told him. The Koufax family was in and out of the water, she continued as she wandered the room. Boogie boards, horsing around, using the shaded lounge chairs the resort provides. Target ordered his Mai Tai, his second of the afternoon, a drink for his wife, a lemonade for one of the grandkids, then dragged his wife up to hit the water with the kids again. He came back, plopped down, started on his drink, and died at 49, a day before his 50th birthday.
All she had to do was stretch out somewhere, mark where he sat, what he drank, dump the poison in while he's in the water, walk the fuck away.
Which she did, before she strolled back to the resort spa and enjoyed a facial. Pre-booked. It was always going to be poison for this one, I'd say. If not on the beach, then at the pool bar or the open-air bar, one of the restaurants. She saw her chance and she took it.
Did they question her?
Busy season at the resort, but the locals spoke with her briefly. She stated she'd been on the beach about that time, had even noticed the big, happy family. She'd left for her spa appointment and hadn't noticed anyone near the family group. But she'd been engrossed in her book. By the time the feds got wind, she'd poofed.
That's luck as well as smarts and planning.
Studying the board, Reed slipped his hands into his back pockets.
That's a lot of luck.
She's got plenty of it. The only time we know of she ran low was with you.
Yeah.
Absently, he rubbed a hand on his side. How's the side? The shoulder?
I'm good. I'm still doing freaking yoga.
That I'd like to see.
No, you really wouldn't. Let me get you that coffee.
I'll let you practice making the girl of your dreams a latte. But let's have it up here. She looked back at the board. Bounce things around, see if anything shakes.
I was hoping you'd say that.
She gave him 2 hours before she had to drive back to the ferry.
Reed couldn't say anything had shaken, but they both speculated Hobart might settle down in warmer climes for a while. Why not? Taking that angle, they'd both study survivors who'd relocated south.
I'm really glad you finally made it out. Next time, he told her, steaks on the grill for the whole family.
Do you have actual dishes?
Sort of.
Buy dishes and a bed. Feather your nest, partner. It's a really great nest.
Okay, okay. Geez, my mom said the same thing and even threatened to make my dad haul stuff from the attic out here.
Buy your own, she jabbed him in the chest. You're a big boy now.
She started to kiss his cheek, then glanced over at the knock on the door.
Company.
He went to the door, grinned when he opened it to Cece.
Hello, gorgeous. You're just in time to meet one of my favorite people.
Taking her hand, he tugged her in.
Cece Lennon, Essie McVie.
We've met.
Cece, a bright green tam over flowing red hair, strode over in her ancient Uggs, took Essie's hand.
You might not remember.
I do. I met you, briefly, outside of Mi-Hee Jung's hospital room.
I didn't realize, Reed said.
You wanted to check on her and Simone, Cece said. My impression at the time was of a dedicated and caring woman.
I'm never wrong.
You're here to spend some time with Reed.
I've spent it.
What a terrific house. Better when it's got some actual furniture.
Okay, Mom.
I've got to run. Make the ferry. I'm glad I got a chance to see you again, Ms. Lennon.
Cece, Reed, next time you bring Essie over to see us. I hope you bring your husband and little boy.
I'm planning on it.
Reed,
Essie hugged him, kissed his cheek.
I'm proud of you, Chief.
Go on and walk Essie out to her car, Cece ordered. There's a package for you in mine. You can bring it in.
She unwound a bright green scarf as she spoke.
I'm going to help myself to a glass of wine if you have some, Reed.
Got the white and the red you like.
My man. Come back soon, Essie.
Cece tossed her coat, scarf, and hat on a truly deplorable sofa. Essie was right about furniture, Cece thought, deciding on the white Reed had chilling in the refrigerator, as she liked it. She poured two glasses. He'd rather have a beer, she thought, but she hoped her housewarming gift rated the wine. He came back, loaded down with the package.
You had to drive with the window down to fit it in there. It's cold, Cece.
We islanders are sturdy stock.
It's a painting.
A big one, and he could feel the frame under the thick brown paper she'd wrapped it in.
You did a painting for me.
I did, and I hope you'll like it.
I don't even have to see it to know I'll love it.
It'd be more fun if you did see it. Come on, come on, get the paper off. I have a strong opinion where it needs to go. We'll see what you think.
He had to lay it on the kitchen island to peel off the tape, pull the protective cardboard from the corners of the frame. He flipped it over, took a sheet of cardboard from the front, and stared, stunned, grateful, overwhelmed.
Holy shit, Cece.
I take that as approval.
I don't even know what to say. It's amazing.
The beach, the rocks, the strip of sand, all the colors so vivid and strong. Birds winged over the water. A white boat glided toward the horizon. The bluest of blue skies spread, and one of the filmy white clouds formed a dragon like the one guarding her guest room. A few shells, exquisitely detailed, dotted the sand like scattered treasures. And two figures sat on the rocks, angled toward each other, looking out.
It's us, he murmured. It's you and me.
It won't be the last time I paint you, but it's a good start.
I don't know what to say.
He looked at her.
I honestly don't know how to thank you. It's magic, just like you.
That's a perfect thing to say. We look right, don't we? Kindred souls reunited.
I really love you, Cece.
I really love you right back. Where do you think you want to hang it?
It has to go there, over the fireplace. It has to be where you can see it from everywhere.
You're exactly right. No time like the now. I've got hangers.
She reached in her pocket for them.
And a drill in the car if you don't have one.
Yeah, I got one.
And a tape measure. Let's get it done and done right.
She proved fussy about the accuracy of measuring and beat him to hell and back on the math part of it. But with her fussing, calculating, and assistance, he hung his first piece of art in his new home.
I have an original C.C. Lennon. Hell, I'm in an original C.C. Lennon, and it's awesome.
She handed him his glass, tapped hers to it.
To you and your happy home.
He drank with her, then drew her in.
Where would I be now if you hadn't walked down that morning?
You were meant to be here, so here you are.
Sure feels like it.
He kissed the top of her head.
I guess I'm going to have to get serious about furniture. Nothing down here is worthy of the painting.
You're right. Start by getting rid of that ugly couch.
He felt a little pang for the memories made on that ugly couch. The naps taken, the sports watched, the girls he'd gotten naked. Then he looked up at the painting and thought of memories yet to come. The island didn't have an actual furniture store, but it did offer a kind of flea market antique-y sort of place. He found some things there, and at the single year-round gift shop he liked. Used the internet for more. He tried not to think too much about the seeping wounds on his credit card. Still, the island shopping served the dual purpose of public relations. And trading a six-pack for help hauling, assembling, placing the furniture with Cecil gave him the opportunity to get to know the deputy better. For instance, he learned Cecil had a more experienced hand with tools. The man wasn't fast, but he was tireless. Together, they stood back and studied the bed. Reed's first purchase. Because he definitely wanted the girl of his dreams in it. He'd even gone for a new mattress set.
That's a nice bed, Chief.
You think? Yeah, it works.
Simple, he thought. But not so basic it looked like he didn't give a damn. He liked the vertical slats, the low footboard that wouldn't get in his way, the faded charcoal color.
You wanna put the sheets and stuff on it? I'll deal with that later. Let's get the rest loaded in. I appreciate it, Cecil.
Hell, I don't mind. I like putting things together. And it's a cool house.
By the time he passed Cecil the beer, he had a furnished bedroom, a new couch, a second bed, queen size as ordered, set up in the guest room along with nightstands and lamps. Not too matchy, he hoped. Exhausted, he flopped down on his new bed, sans sheets. Considered. Bounced a little. How the hell had he slept on that old piece of shit mattress all this time? He thought about reaching for the beer on his new nightstand. On a coaster. He wasn't a fool. Thought about it again. And drifted right off. He dreamed of drills and hammers, screws and screwdrivers. Not so surprisingly, that slid into a rather stupendous sex dream starring Simone. In the dream, his new headboard banged against the wall as Simone locked her legs around his waist. He woke, hard as iron, a little breathless, and realized the banging didn't stop.
Shit. Fuck, damn.
He shoved up, did his best to adjust himself.
Down, boy,
he muttered and started downstairs. The burly delivery man had been there before.
Sorry, I was upstairs.
You got another one.
The driver held out his tablet for Reed to sign.
You know, if I don't answer or I'm not here, you can just leave stuff.
You gotta say so in writing.
Okay, I'll do that.
The driver hulked back to his truck, leaving Reed with a big, ridiculously heavy box on his doorstep. He hauled it in, pulled out his pocket knife to cut the seal.
Dishes. Oh yeah, I bought dishes.
White, he remembered, because once he'd started looking, all the colors and patterns made his head hurt. White was easy. Except now he had to unload them, and he probably had to wash them, which meant loading the dishwasher, then unloading it again,
then putting them away. The idea made him long for another nap. Plus, he still had to put sheets on the bed, and he hadn't unpacked the new towels. Did he have to wash those, too? How the hell was he supposed to know? No point calling to ask his mother, because she'd just say yes right straight off. He just knew it.
It can wait,
he decided, going back up for his beer. Not altogether warm, he told himself, taking it into the shower. But the dishes and towels, the every damn thing, nagged at him until he gave up. He dressed, loaded dishes in the dishwasher, towels in the washing machine. He reminded himself he had a flat screen coming. Two, in fact, as he'd ordered one for the master. The one downstairs wouldn't go above the fireplace as he'd imagined, because he had the magic painting. But he had other walls. And he had a full week before he took over as chief. He'd get it done. He went up to put sheets on the bed. Also new. Had he lost his mind? His mother would undoubtedly claim they needed washing first, but to hell with it. He couldn't do everything. He'd gotten a duvet in a color called indigo, mainly because that's what they'd shown on the bed in the picture, and it seemed good enough. It came with shams, which seemed like a lot of fuss and bother, but he finished it up. He didn't have it in him to go out for food, so went with the reliable frozen pizza. He switched beer for Coke, carted his dinner up to his office. He sat, eating pizza, studying his boards.
Where are you, Patricia, you murdering bitch? I bet it's warm where you are.
He shifted his gaze to his targets board, to the group he'd separated out. One in Savannah, another in Atlanta, one in Fort Lauderdale, another in Coral Gables. Add the kid who'd joined the Navy and was currently stationed in San Diego, and the woman who'd moved to Phoenix with her husband and daughter.
Which one? Where are you hiding now?
Patricia, currently Ellen Bostwick, had a pretty little vacation bungalow in Coral Gables. Every day she went out with a camera, a wide-brimmed hat, and a backpack. She put on her disguise, had friendly conversations with the neighbors. She was, she told them, a freelance photographer taking 3 months to do her own photography book of the area. She cheerfully took shots of the brats next door for their idiot mother. She printed them out, even framed them. Recently divorced, she told her neighbors, she'd wanted to take some time on her own and time away from the cold and crowds of Chicago. Emily Devlin, nay Frank, had been 18 on the night of the Down East Mall massacre. She'd been coming back from her break from her summer job at Orange Julius when the war broke out. She knew gunfire when she heard it. Her father was a cop, and started to sprint away from the sound. But then it came from both directions. She knew what to do, even as panic spun through her. You find a hole, and you hide. She aimed for the closest store, ramming through the rush of people. A woman fell in front of her. She nearly tripped over her. Moving fast, Emily had grabbed the woman under the arms, old, frail, moaning, and dragged her into the store. Glass exploded. They both suffered cuts, but Emily managed to pull the woman behind an entry display of summer tops and sweaters. A clerk ran by her, eyes wheeling. In her head, Emily screamed, "Don't! Don't!" She closed her eyes at the sound of the scream, the thud of a body. She held on to the old woman, who'd live another 8 years before she died of natural causes. She left Emily $100,000 in her will. Emily, now a wife and mother, used part of her inheritance to buy a house in a pretty community far away from Maine winters and bad memories. She would live longer than the woman she'd saved, but her clock was ticking down. Chapter 18. Reed dressed for his first day as chief. He had a uniform, khaki shirt and pants, even a billed hat, but chose jeans and a light blue shirt. He'd pull out the uniform for special occasions, but snagging one of his grandmother's sayings,
He'd begin as he meant to go on. He pulled on boots, not new, not too beat up, and since March blew brisk, a leather jacket he'd had for about a decade. He clipped his service weapon to his belt. He opted to walk the 3/4 of a mile to the village. Reduce the carbon footprint, he thought, and as chief, he had a car available at the station. The walk gave him time to take stock. He wasn't nervous. He'd lived on the island for nearly 3 months now, had felt its pulse. Plenty of the 1,863 islanders, ages from 7 months to 88, hadn't figured he'd last the winter. But he had. Some of them calculated he wouldn't finish out the summer as chief. But he would. He didn't just like his life here. It was his life. He had a separate mission, and he'd work the Hobart case until the crazy bitch heard the door slam on her cell. But his priority now, from today on, had to be the island. He spotted a couple of deer in what he thought of as his woods, took that as a positive sign. Snowmelt made the ground soft under his feet, and the white stuff lay in pools and patches. They weren't done with it, at least according to the old guys who hung out at the sunrise, drinking coffee, playing cards, and bullshitting in the afternoons. Their consensus called for one more good nor'easter to blow winter out into spring. He wouldn't bet against them. He passed some of the vacation homes that would be closed up until summer came along. Vandalism, even the kid shit, was rare. Everybody knew every damn body, and everybody who knew every damn body also knew that the island economy largely depended on the summer people. A few more houses. Islanders. He'd made a point to find a way to make at least a passing acquaintance with all the year-rounders. Artists, photographers, shopkeepers, cooks, gardeners, retirees, bloggers, teachers, lobstermen, craftspeople. A couple of lawyers, a scatter of medical types, mechanics, handymen and women, and so on. All of them kept the island humming. Now he did, too. He watched the ferry glide toward the mainland. Some had business there or took jobs off-season. A few sent their kids to private school. The 40-minute commute wasn't bad to his mind. No traffic, after all. He passed the ferry dock where he knew from his own memories cars would line up by the dozens for the trip home after a summer day on Tranquility Island. He wound his way into the village. Like the rentals, most shops and restaurants stood closed until the season. Some would get a fresh coat of paint once spring bloomed, so faded clabbered would become bright, drawing in visitors and disposable income. From there, the marina and beach offered everything the summer people could want. Sun, sand, water, and water sports. He wound his way to the sunrise, stepped into the smell of bacon and coffee. Val, the counter waitress with bright blonde hair and a pink apron, offered him a cheerful smile.
Morning, Chief.
Morning, Val.
Got the first day jitters, do you?
Not so much. I'm going to need 6 large coffees to go. 2 black, 1 with cream only, 1 cream and 1 sugar, 1 cream double sugar, and 1 with that vanilla cream you've got and triple sugar.
She gave him a nod as she went for the pot.
Treating the station?
It seems like the thing to do on day 1.
Good thinking. I'll mark them with what's what for you. Maybe you want some coffee cake to go along with it.
I've got an order for 12 donuts from the bakery. Cops, donuts. It's what we do.
While Val put the order together, Reed greeted some of the breakfast regulars. The 2 grizzled men with New England accents so thick he had to retune the frequency of his ears to understand them. The manager of the seasonal Beach Buddies. A birder blogger with his camera, field glasses, notebook. The bank manager. The island librarian.
Thanks, Val.
Good luck today, Chief.
He carried the takeout tray down to the bakery, picked up his 12 donuts, and chatted briefly with the woman who ran Island Rentals while she waited for an order of sticky buns for what she called a brainstorming meeting. He continued down, took the right at the corner, and walked to the faded white single-story building with its narrow covered porch. The sign on the strip of grass between sidewalk and porch read, Tranquility Island Police Department. Juggling the coffee and donuts, he